Well, soon after the holidays are over, Utah State Legislature will kick into gear. Joining me this morning, I have Craig Powell, the state representative for District 54, including Summit and Wasatch Counties. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning, Leslie. I have a traffic report for you. I just drove over from Heber City, and the plows are out well. 40 is open, and I made it in just fine. Thanks.
Well, good. Great. I appreciate you being here. Let's see. Let's talk about some of the proposed legislation that you're talking about. New penalties for anyone caught flying a drone near a wildfire. This, of course, comes after the Wheeler fire there on Labor Day weekend this year when air suppression efforts had to stop because a drone was spotted in the area. So what would your legislation do?
So as I researched that, I had a lot of constituents talk to me that week, very upset about the interruption of the firefighting efforts. And I was just quickly able to determine that we don't have state laws specifically on aerial unmanned vehicles, drones, whatever you want to call them, and specifically the fire threat. So there are several legislators, as you can imagine, who are exploring different regulations on drones. Senator Wayne Harper, I understand, made a presentation last month at an interim meeting on Capitol Hill about some larger regulations, broader regulations on, you know, when you can fly them, certain changes to state law. My bill, just to focus and hopefully be able to get something easy and simple passed, will simply be interference with firefighting operations by drones. It is setting some proximity regulations, and then it is imposing some criminal penalties ranging from misdemeanor all the way up to a third-degree felony for if there were actually loss of life or property damage, things that happen. So it's very specific to firefighting.
Yeah, my understanding, though, is that it's already illegal under Utah law to interfere with efforts to fight a fire. So is this redundant?
Well, thanks. It's a good question. As I looked at that law, it's very, very broad, and I actually think that it would be almost impossible to prosecute nowadays for somebody to say, well, I wasn't interfering at all. I was back this far and I was just observing. So if, you know, I mean, we all know that it is something that we want to discourage, prohibit, I think at least in the manner that, you know, it has arisen. And so I don't think there's any problem. And I think it's a need to go ahead and make that clear. You know, unfortunately, there are people in society that need laws made for them. And that's why we will do this.
All right. You've worked on this a couple of times to increase the smoking age from 18 to 21. Are you going to bring that back?
Yes, we actually have a really good broad base of support. This year, I've got youth groups all over the state who are working together, have contacted me, working together with the American Cancer Society, American Lung Association, Heart Association. I actually think that, by the way, Senator Brian Shiozawa, former president of Utah Medical Association, who is the, you know, sponsor of the Medicaid expansion proposals in the Senate, is the Senate sponsor of my bill. So we're teaming up on that. And, you know, the studies are just so clear that if we can postpone smoking for just a year or two or any sort of use of tobacco, then people are very unlikely to take it up after that point. And so I think it's a really important bill. I think it has a good chance this year of passage in Utah, yes.
All right. So you don't have the tobacco companies coming to Utah to try and fight this?
Yes, actually, they always do. Unfortunately, Utah Retail Merchants is also very active in opposition, and there are campaign donations associated with all of those things as well at the legislative level. So it's a tough nut to crack, but we're working hard on it.
All right. Charter school funding. You have drafted a bill that would what, raise taxes in an election year?
Yeah, this is really interesting, Leslie. So we have this fight every year at the legislature about the money that gets taken from local districts that they are required to pay towards the charter students who live in their district, and it really is a net loss to the budget. Now, of course, there are many legislators who argue that it's simply a substitution. That's why they call it replacement funding. Sometimes they even say, well, this is just phantom students, phantom money. If we're giving this money to the districts, then you know, they're just getting a windfall because these students are going to charter schools. Well, as I've looked at school budgeting, that's not the way Utah school budgets work. There's no extra money floating around, you know, in school districts. So what my bill would do is simply to try to put the controversy to rest by saying we at the legislature have created a basically a separate school system, the charter system, and let's go ahead and create a property tax that would support that. And so this bill would hold school districts harmless, so they would no longer be accountable to pay, responsible to pay the money for charter school students, and instead that would be a separate portion of the property tax that A, will appear on your property tax statement, and B, will not be deducted from the school district's revenues. Now, because charter schools still do not have the power to impose property taxes, it will essentially still be levied by the school district, but most importantly, the truth in taxation process, the school districts will not have to hold a truth in taxation hearing if they're having to raise taxes in order to keep their own funding the same and give the money that they have to give to charter districts, to charter schools. And so it's basically a matter of property tax transparency. And yes, it could actually end up resulting in more taxes being paid, but that would actually also be an increase in the traditional districts and an increase for the charter as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly some opposition to that. And I think Senator Howard Stevenson, one of the big one, not wanting to have that line item. How come?
The difference of opinion is simply that saying that charters are a competitive mechanism, that they need to compete with our districts, and therefore that there needs to be some sort of a consequence or an impact to that competition. And basically what they're saying is we want to take money away from the local school districts when that happens. The problem that I have with that philosophically, of course, is that they're not accountable, they're not elected, the charter boards are not elected. So when they tax, you know, in that fashion, the voters don't really have any way to hold them accountable. So yes, the Utah Taxpayers Association, it's funny because the charter schools, who themselves stand to gain quite a bit from this, basically by creating additional mechanisms, so we don't have this fight all the time. I think they're quietly in support, but because they're often aligned with these very conservative legislators on the Hill, they're not vocally out in front of support of my bill right now. So that'll be very interesting to see.
Yeah. So. Any idea how big of a tax increase we're talking about?
I'm working on that right now with the fiscal analyst at the Capitol, and it will be different for every school district, just as property taxes are different for every school district, because in my bill, this is planned to be based on how many charter students each year live in your district boundaries who attend charter schools. So it, you know, could be more, could be less in certain districts around the state.
Are you on the task force that's behind this?
I was not. I attended many of the task force meetings, and I was disappointed that they did not take the simple step at their final meeting of adding to the property tax notice the fact that this money goes to charter schools from local districts. So I have made my feelings known about that.
That sounds like you've got a fight against. You're going to have a fight on the Hill on this.
Could be. It's. I think it's probably about equally divided. Between legislators. Yeah.
Hmm. All right. You've also said that you're going to try again to do away with the Zion curtain, that wall that separates a dining area and a restaurant from an area where alcoholic drinks are made. Do you have a better shot of doing that this year?
As we get further and further down the road in the number of years since we created that policy, and as the gap grows between the grandfathered restaurants who don't have that restriction and the new restaurants that do, I think it is becoming increasingly apparent that it's an untenable system. Leslie, what I predict is that this will eventually be removed as part of a larger overhaul. Those who created it probably don't want to admit, that we need to change it, but as often happens with Utah liquor legislation, possibly it's going to be a creation of some more club licenses, or maybe just a change in how we retail liquor overall. So I don't know. I'm not going to make any promises. And the reason I say that is that it's the Speaker of the House, our leader in the House, in my chamber, who actually brokered that deal 5 or 6 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, I think it was, that created that new restriction of the wall. And I don't think that he wants to do away with it as a standalone bill. But as I say, I think putting together some other pieces, we could probably get that changed.
So that's Greg Hughes that
yes.
you're referring to?
Yes.
So just kind of what, wait and see?
Well, yeah, wait and see. I'm going to keep sponsoring this bill because I think that we can't let the discussion go away. That, as I said, the disparity between the restaurants that don't have the wall and those that do, that's just such a glaring issue that it's got to be addressed one way or another. And we can't. Yeah, nobody else is stepping forward to keep the issue in the limelight. So I'm doing that.
Okay, this is an interesting. Water heaters. You've said you'll sponsor a new rule that would ban the sale of hot water heaters that don't qualify as ultra low nitrogen oxide. Is this an environmental issue?
You know, we have been studying now for almost 3 years, ever since the citizens really started complaining about the bad air days, especially in the Wasatch Front Valleys. And the governor's Clean Air Action Team has actually done some incredibly detailed empirical research to show exactly what are causing those problems. And most people don't realize this, but the huge refineries, the industrial sources are only now about 10% of that dirty air that we have. Of course, automobiles still are the largest part at somewhere near 50, a little over 50% actually. But close to 40% are our homes and small businesses. And as they've looked at those, it's a lot of the day-to-day furnaces, water heaters, and things. These particular water heaters are an incredible breakthrough. I mean, we're talking reduction of up to 90% in the emissions that are going into the air just from changing over to these water heaters. Now, we have an air quality board, and we thought that they had the power to pass a rule requiring this. The Utah Home Builders Association and the Utah Realtors Association opposed this just the last couple of months. At a rulemaking body, they opposed the fact that the Air Quality Board made this rule without going to the legislature. Because I believe that this is the right and proven policy that we should be following, I said to the Home Builders Association, all right, well then, if your objection is that this should be passed through the legislature, then what if I just run the bill and pass it through the legislature? Will you support it? The Home Builders Association did not give me a promise of support. Instead, they said that the water heaters are too expensive, that they won't have that much effect, and that they may even be dangerous to use at our high altitude in Utah, all of which those reasons I don't think are borne out by the evidence. And so once again, this is going to be, there's a lot of public support for this. In fact, there's a lot of industry support for this. And even the water heater manufacturers have worked with the board on getting it. So I think it's an important air quality thing. That, you know how, Leslie, the citizens always ask, why aren't you doing anything about air quality? Why doesn't the legislature do anything about air quality? We're certainly trying, and I hope that this will get passed this year.
So you're moving forward, irregardless of what the other folks are going to do.
That's right.
Let's talk national politics for just a couple of minutes here. You're the state director for the Kasich campaign. John Kasich, of course, the Ohio governor and Republican presidential candidate. He's polling in the middle of a crowded Republican field. Do you think he can still pull ahead here? He's got like single digit.
So here's his biggest problem. It's that not anybody, even the radio announcers, I don't know how to pronounce his name yet. So no, it's fine, Leslie. But John Kasich from Ohio. You know, Ohio is the most important state for electoral politics. Anybody who's watched the presidential elections knows that. And John Kasich has great experience, and he also has this feature that he has state experience and he has federal experience and he can take Ohio. And I just think he's a reasonable Republican. You know, he's been my first choice for a long time in this particular election. So, yeah, just trying to get out the word out there about John Kasich. I think he gives the Republicans a real chance to win back the White House in a pragmatic and reasonable fashion.
Certainly the most liberal there in the field. Does he even have a chance?
You know, I think he needs to stay in play because we have a general election coming up once these primaries are over.
All right. Also wanted to ask you, you have been serving, I think, since 2009. It's election year. Are you going to be running again?
I will. One of the things that's so fascinating this year, Leslie, and I want all your listeners to think about this, this is going to be an election unlike anything we've ever seen before because of the new changes to the nominating process in Utah. I mean, these are huge. That you can't believe how much the legislature is in an uproar about this Count My Vote initiative and now the new signature gathering process, to the extent that lobbyists have now contacted nearly every legislator and said, okay, it's a new game, and now we've got to gather signatures, and we'll gather your signatures for you, and it'll be a campaign donation, but if you change the rules so that it's not a campaign donation, it's amazing what's happening. This is a watershed in what's happened in Utah electoral politics, probably in anybody's lifetime, and a lot of people are not quite aware of it, but I promise you, this year is going to be totally different in how Utah elections are run, and I believe it's so important that we have this new system in place. I do support the changes, and so I'm staying definitely in the race and want to be out there and championing this process.
All right. Well, when you say changes, I thought it was going to back to court.
So pretty much everybody has resigned themselves to the fact it's only about, 13, 14 days from now that we all have to start gathering signatures. And amazingly, even those who were adamantly against any of the changes to the Utah caucus and convention process, they've all now jumped on board. I think almost everyone, 98% of, for instance, my fellow legislators, will all be using the new process to gather signatures starting on January 4th in just a few days from now.
So it's going to run like it was intended to run.
Unless a court comes in and somehow stops it, and the Utah Republican Party is still saying that, okay, we'll let you do both tracks. If as long as you go through the caucus convention system, we'll still let you gather signatures. Well, that's not what the law says. The law says you can gather signatures and signatures only, but the Utah Republican Party, that's their last straw that they're fighting, and we'll just see if they can get a court to bite on that.
Have you heard of any competition for your seat?
Not at the moment, not publicly anybody, that anyone's told me.
Okay. I'm going to leave it at that. Craig, thanks for making the drive over.
Oh, you're welcome, Leslie. Thanks for having me over.
Craig Powell, State Representative for District 54, representing Park City and Wasatch County. KPCW News Time now, 8:33. Stay tuned. We'll be talking with Colville Mayor Trevor Johnson.
Hi, this is Chris Cherniak. Join Nell Larson and me each Tuesday at 9 a.m. for This Green Earth, a talk show about the environment and our relationship with it. That's This Green Earth every Tuesday at 9 a.m. on KPCW.
Brought to you in part by Rocky Mountain Power, Recycle Utah, Vail Resorts, Republic Services, and Bocholt Landscape Architecture.
Additional support for programming on KPCW is provided by Sammy's Bistro, now offering breakfast Thursdays to Sundays from 7 to 11 a.m. Peterson Calder Real Estate, Berkshire Hathaway, selling Park City since 1989. ExperienceParkCity.com. Sean Potter, Estate Planning in Summit and Wasatch Counties, WasatchLawGroup.com, 647-5951. Done to Your Taste Catering, 21 years perfecting life celebrations. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
It's 8:34 now. Good morning. Well, as we've reported, nearly 70 people turned out a week ago at the Summit County Fairgrounds to hear about the new plans to move the fairgrounds to Hoytsville. Joining me now on the phone, I have the mayor of Colville, Trevor Johnson. Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you doing?
I'm well. Thank you for being with us. You were at the meeting last week and spoke to the audience. Give us a little bit of background about the fairgrounds. I mean, how long has the county fair been at Colville Park?
That's been there 70 plus years, I believe. There's a long-standing tradition of the fair being there in Colville, and a lot of history there for sure.
All right. So, what was your reaction then when Summit County started looking for a new site off the Colville Park area?
Okay, so that was on my radar about a year and a half or two before I was elected, and there's a little bit of a the knee-jerk reaction typically with Colville residents especially, and including myself, was a negative reaction. The county has moved several of the services out of the county seat over into the Park City area, and, you know, better or worse, and this, again, long before I was there. And so it felt like and it looked like that was just one more thing that the county was doing to take out of Colville. So in that void, if that was to happen, let me back up a little bit. When I then got elected, and then that was one of the first things I did was contact at the time it was Bob Jasper, the county manager, to try and work through any options that we could to keep the fair there in Colville. We had several meetings with the North Summit School District, with several private landowners or within city limits that we thought could lend the land itself to the vision that the county had. And long story short, none of those really panned out for a variety of reasons, not you know, whether it was a school district or the county or the private landowner that just wasn't interested for one reason or another. At that point, I started looking at, okay, well, if the fair is going to move out, that land there does get turned over back over to the city as per the lease agreement. So what does that mean for this 14 acres of land that we have in the middle of town? And through that process, I developed put together a committee with the North Summit School District, the North Summit Recreation District, as well as the county and the city, a couple city staff, to come up with a vision for what that meant. We got our engineers involved, and they came up with this rendering that we had at the town hall to give a vision and I guess a proposal of what we could do with that land should the county decide to move the fair.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. In speaking to the audience last week, you gave some details on the redevelopment that you could do. We're talking like a splash pond, a pavilion, volleyball courts.
Right.
What else?
There's a big splash pad there, and I went to almost every door in Colville when I was campaigning in North, and surprisingly to me, there was the. When asked what would you like to see in your community and things that we could do for the community, very specifically, and by a large margin, there was mentioned a need and a want for a splash pad. So that was kind of one of the major, or I guess the main points that I wanted to make sure was in this concept was a splash pad. And the Morgan has one, and in talking with some of their city officials, it's been very successful in attracting people not only in their community but also outside of their communities. It's going to have a splash pad, a park area for kids, playground area, a multi-use field, so a soccer field that can host a number of events that the North Summit Rec District does. Also, there's right now in the current facility, the high school uses a softball field for their women's softball team, and so that it will have a softball field. There's a number of pavilions, a volleyball court, sand volleyball, a basketball court. There's an amphitheater, there's a walking path that goes around the edge of it, along the side of Chalk Creek there, and then of course some parking stalls and a number of other things. But that's the major points of the proposal that we could do, or an idea of what we could do should that become available.
Yeah. So who pays for all of this?
So. One of the reasons that we got the North Summit Rec District involved, as well as the North Summit School District, was the Rec District got a grant from the county to build a field up by the middle school there in Colville, and they got a few hundred thousand dollars. So they were looking in working with the city, because the city had some property up there that we were going to donate to that cause, so that they could have a field up there and again host a number of these activities, soccer, baseball, football, et cetera. I asked them to come on board, and with this possibility coming down the road, I thought, you know, rather than have a field up there and a field down here, maybe we can consolidate our efforts and resources. So they got a seat at the table. Another one of the, when we talk about funding, one of the options we have are grants. And we've used grants to fund, for example, the wastewater treatment facility that we put in. The grant, when it comes to recreation in rural areas, is a match grant. You have to match whatever it is you're looking for. And the grant that the county gave the North Summit Rec District qualifies for a match for any grant that we want to go after on a federal level. So there's a couple different entities that provide that. So we essentially triple our money with North Summit Rec District having a voice and a seat at the table as far as what, you know, they came up and had a lot of input in what the park looked like as well. Beyond that, go ahead.
You can finish. I was just going to move on.
No, sorry.
Well,
beyond that, I envision, and I've been talking with not only residents, but also utility provider services such as Rocky Mountain Powers have agreed and are on board with. You know, I can envision a Rocky Mountain Power Pavilion. So there's going to be the balance of that funded through donations, sweat equity, or you know, other grants from local businesses and things like that.
Well, you know, we had heard how tough it was for the county to find a site within Colville city limits. There was some talk that, well, now that property owners know that there's $2 million available, do you think you'll see any interest to keep it in Colville?
Will I see any interest or the county?
Yeah, will the county see any interest?
You know, that fell on deaf ears with Mr. Jasper when he was here. The current manager, Tom Fisher, you know, I haven't really had a conversation with him about trying to keep that in Colville, something I, you know, might want to look into. But he's been, you know, he's come in kind of on the tail end of the, as far as the decision-making process, whether we keep it there or whether they keep it there or not. But, you know, there was some talk, at the town hall meeting where, you know, why move it to another place? And then specifically, why move it to Hoytsville? Why not move it to Oakley, where they already have a facility there that might lend itself to that kind of entertainment? And my reaction to that is, if they're not going to keep it in Hoytsville, then I would sure hope they would reinvest in Colville and keep it there. And I think it's really important. And I think the city council or the county council is in agreement that it's important that it keeps on the east side. It maintains at least some level of the tradition and sentiment that goes along with the fair, and so if it's, you know, I'm open to any suggestion or notion that we can keep it inside of Colville, but the off chance that but the chance that it doesn't stay in Colville and moves out, then we need to be prepared as a city, and also I would certainly hope that we'd keep it on this side of Wanship where it maintains its tradition.
Yeah.
To some extent.
The Judd Lane site, though, I mean, can it still be good economically for Colville? We heard last week that people are just going to come to the fair and then leave.
So, there, you know, if you're looking at a 10-day-a-year activity or discussion as to what's going to be at that event, even in the current one, you know, if you take 10 days in Colville versus 10 days in Hoytsville, yeah, it's probably we're going to see less of an economic impact as it is currently constituted. But I think if the county is looking at filling the event center with activities throughout the year, and I don't know what that means. I don't know if it's 52 weeks. I don't know if it's 40 or whatever. And I don't even know that they know. We're still in the very early processes here. But, you know, if you fill it even a couple months, you know, 4 or 8 weeks worth of activities, you know, I think the net economic impact is in the positive for Colville. There's still a hotel down there that people are going to come down and stay in that need to have that kind of service, gasoline, and, you know, the shop, restaurants and things like that. But if you take the 10 days versus 10 days, I don't know that, you know, I think it would probably be a little bit of a decrease in the economic impact for Colville.
Okay, so at this point, it's kind of just wait and see. You've got more meetings scheduled with the community in the new year?
Right. So it's kind of in the county's court right now. You know, they're still going through their process, their due diligence, and all the things associated with acquiring that land and moving forward. So there's going to be plenty of opportunities to voice one's opinion. And one thing I'd like to really express my gratitude for with the council, city council, the county council, as well as Tom Fisher, is their willingness to hear the public's voice. They're getting the public involved from the very first steps here. That's something that hasn't necessarily happened in the past. One thing that I do feel have been told and have seen is the county council's commitment to invest in the east side, which we haven't seen it on the ground yet, but I have seen it in concept and in planning and in sincerity, and that's appreciated as well. I think sometimes it's kind of easy to forget us over here on the east side a little bit.
Okay, Trevor, I need to leave it there. Thanks for your time this morning.
You bet. Okay, thanks, Leslie.
That's the mayor of Colville, Trevor Johnson. Newstime, 8:46.
I'm Dana Edwards from Park City and KPCW supporter. Park City's Epic Promise grants and donations focus on youth programs and environmental initiatives that impact our local communities. Grants fund programs that help kids achieve great things in the classroom and develop a passion for the outdoors by engaging guests, local communities, and employees. More at epicpromise.com.
Hi, I'm Matt from San Francisco Design, celebrating 25 years in Park City. San Francisco Design is happy to sponsor public affairs programming on KPCW. For 25 years, we have been providing home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. We're located on Bonanza Drive and at sanfrandesign.com. San Francisco Design, love your home.
Hi, I'm Chris Greenwood, and I'm happy to support KPCW. Christopher K. Greenwood & Associates has been providing legal services to Utah residents for over 15 years now. We're located in Park City at the Gateway Center and can help with personal injury, criminal defense, divorce, child custody, alimony, and real estate matters. We can be reached at 655-3680.
KPCW News Time now, 8:47. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the Park City Community Foundation, the recipient of a $25,000 grant, in the studio to tell us how that money will be used. I have Foundation Director Katie Wright. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So you received the grant from whom?
From the Park City Board of Realtors, and it's to launch a new program that we're trying here in Park City called the Park City Giving Guide, which is a publication that the Park City Community Foundation has produced with the goal of really connecting part-time residents with local nonprofits that are having an impact here in the community.
So the giving guide is already published?
It is. Hot off the press. We've only gotten 100 copies, so we're working on distribution right now. But the idea came from a part-time resident up in Promontory. He lives in the greater D.C. area and is involved with a program called the Philanthropy Catalog. His name is Tom Rafa and his wife Kathy. And what they found in D.C. is that often there was great programs in the city and then a lot of capacity, wealth in the outskirts, and those people weren't connected. And as a very philanthropic family, they came to Park City and thought, well, there's the same thing going on here. There's all these people who love Park City but aren't here full time and don't know about what nonprofit is doing good work. And so he thought this concept of a catalog makes a lot of sense here. So with his vision and the support of the Park City Board of Realtors, in addition to the Medical Center, the Community Foundation has been able to launch this publication, and we're really excited about it.
So when you open it up, what do you see?
So what you see is a lot of beautiful photos and content about 35 different nonprofits. So you find information about their mission, about some of their needs, and then, of course, contact information. And one thing we've learned through Live PC, Give PC is that if you make giving easy and accessible, people are very generous. So this allows donors to just give directly to the nonprofits that pique their interest, or they can write a check or send the Community Foundation stock and then ask us to disperse it. So it makes it very accessible.
Yeah, so but you only have a third of the nonprofits in the county.
Yeah, so we thought long and hard about organizations that appeal to second homeowners. And of course, this can be a tool for anyone, but really that was the focus of it. So the Community Foundation has lots of programs. We have Live PC, Give PC, our nonprofit education, where any nonprofit that's located or supported supporting Park City can participate in. But this being an experiment, a first trial, we wanted to keep it concise. You know, of course, cost was a factor and limited. And then if, and we hope it is successful, we can expand it at you know, as time moves on.
Mm-hmm. So how did you decide who got in?
Yeah, so the nonprofits that are included have three things in common. One, they have a track record of good governance and financial stability. Two, they have programming here that supports Greater Park City that's proven and impactful. And then third, and probably most importantly, they had to have broad appeal. So when you look at the 85 organizations that participate in Live PC, Give PC, and I love them all, and I love that vehicle that allows them to raise money on those days, some of them really don't have necessarily broad appeal to someone who doesn't live here day in day. And the example I can think of easily is a lot of the very small sports teams that are really just meant for local kids that you would support if your child or your grandchild or your friend's child is involved. Maybe not applicable to people who are just here part-time.
So how do you get this into the hands of second homeowners?
Yeah, so we're working on that now. We're going to mail directly about 5,000 to people's primary homes. We're using contacts and people who have been participating in Live PC, Give PC who are out of state. And then also, of course, Community Foundation Women's Giving Fund members, you know, people that are in our circle. And then we're working, and this is a work in progress, with second homeowner communities. I attended a cookie party up at Promontory and talked about it with some of the homeowners there. We want to distribute it at Colony. And so getting it directly into people's hands when they're here as well as at home.
Okay. So you said you just published, what, a few now and then with a second run?
Oh, no, no. I only have 100 in my hands because they're literally hot off the press, but they're all going out in the next week or so. So I'll get a big delivery to the foundation today. One part of the partnership with the Park City Board of Realtors that's so awesome is, you know, they are the first people who meet a new family that's moving here or buying a home here. And so what we'll do over the next year is that when a family closes on a new home, about a month later, they'll get a copy of this from a letter from their realtor and me. I'm welcoming the person to the community. So the Park City Board of Realtors is a key part of us getting this in people's hands and promoting it. And then also, you know, just partnerships with different communities.
Yeah. So is this evergreen or do you need to republish it every year?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the one in DC area, it's very well established and raises about $5 million a year. It's very successful. They do it every year. And they have so many more nonprofits that, you know, different nonprofits are promoted every year and highlighted because they couldn't possibly include all the great organizations. So this one has staying power. We could do it annually. We're just sort of going to wait and see. If it has longer staying power than that, then, you know, we wouldn't waste the resources, honestly.
Okay. If a second homeowner happens to be listening and wants one, they can pick it up at the offices there?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, this is a tool for anyone. You know, we had second homeowners in mind because nonprofits have asked us, how do we connect part-time residents? And we've also heard from part-time residents, how do we know where to give? But it's really a tool for anyone. So anyone who's interested in it is welcome to contact us. Probably the easiest way is to visit our website, parkcitycf.org. And there's a little blog on the giving guide, and we can send you a copy or deliver it to you.
Okay. Katie, anything else?
No, that's all. Thank you, Leslie.
Thanks, Katie. It's Katie Wright, the Executive Director of the Park City Community Foundation. Newstime, 8:53.
Hi, this is State Farm Agent Benita Vanderkoy, longtime supporter of KPCW. With over 23 years of State Farm experience, I assist clients with insurance and financial services needs in Wasatch and Summit counties. My new office is located in the Redstone Shopping Center near Whole Foods. I can still be reached at 435-657-2220.
Assemble is a delighted underwriter of KPCW. Assemble offers private offices, semi-private cubicles, and a co-working space. Assemble can accommodate any work style. Located in New Park at Kimball Junction, 435-709-7359 or assembleparkcity.com.
Well, following Christmas, what to do with that Christmas tree? Park City Lacrosse team can help you out. In the studio to tell us more about their annual tree pickup fundraiser, I have Jackson Burton and Tobin Greenwald. They're members of the Park City Lacrosse team. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Tobin, you want to start it off? You've got a couple of pickup days that you're telling people to sign up for?
Yeah, we're picking up on the 9th and 10th and the weekend of the 2nd and 3rd.
Okay, let's do that chronologically. So the 2nd and 3rd of January, and then the following weekend, 9th and the 10th?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, so what do people need to do if they're interested in having the team members come
up? So there's flyers all around town at local businesses, and we'll be passing them out at shops and putting them on windshields. So you can all the information is online on our website, parkcitylacrosse.org. And so you can just contact us through that and schedule a tree pickup.
Okay, so how many members do you have to do the work?
The whole team and the girls' team. So we have plenty of hands on deck for the tree pickup.
Yeah, any idea how many you've picked up in the past? I mean, what's a big year for you?
500, about,
Wow, okay. And then there's a small charge. How much is that?
It's $35 for just a regular tree, and it's $50 for 10-plus feet. So.
Okay, and then what do you guys do with them?
We take them out and we drop them at pickup points to be recycled later on.
Oh, okay. People need to have their tree cleaned.
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. I guess that's probably always an issue if it's still full of tinsel or ornaments or something, you just leave it there.
Yeah, we can't deal with trees like that. It's really impossible. We're not going to take people's ornaments, throw them away. So.
Okay. Again, the easiest thing to do is to register online then?
Yeah, yes. Definitely.
And that address is what?
ParkCityLacrosse.org.
Spell it out or L-A-X?
So just spelled out, so lacrosse.
Okay. Anything else people should know?
Everybody make sure to come out to our games this spring. That would be awesome.
And thanks to the community for all the support you give to us. We really appreciate it.
Okay, yeah, because you're a club sport, then you use this money to, what, pay for fees and uniforms? And
yeah. So we use, like, all of this money. It helps, like, cut down on costs. So
yeah, without these fundraisers, Park City Lacrosse, the prices would be through the roof. So we really appreciate everyone who participates in the fundraisers.
All right, good training for you guys, too.
Yep.
Lifting trees.
Definitely.
All right. Anything else?
We're also selling chocolate. We'll be selling it throughout February, and so we'll be at grocery stores, so look out for that. We'd love to have you guys buy our chocolate.
Okay, Jackson, Tobin, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks.
KPCW News Time now, 8:57.
Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.